Hi, I'm Samantha, and you're listening to Drinking and Droshing, Tour with a Twist. And you don't usually find pigeons, flour, and oil in the emergency room.
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
So, you know that I love bringing friends onto this podcast, right?
I do, in fact, know this.
Okay, so I have to tell you that I think I've knocked this one out of the park. I have an incredible friend who loves a bargain, and this week we have a two-for-one Parsha.
Whoa, two-for-one. That's exciting.
And it deals with caring for people and your community and making sure that people are just taken care of in times of sickness and health.
Huh. That sounds like a really meaningful double portion.
Yeah, well, I don't want to nurse this intro any longer, and so I think we should get started and welcome her in because she's waiting.
Well, then let's go.
So last week, we spoke a little bit about what happens when we have a major trauma or tragedy in our communities and how leaders hopefully help us make our way through those tragedies. But what happens when we have things that we need to deal with in everyday life? You know, not necessarily death, but sickness, illness, you know, being able to take care of our communities when they're in crisis, but maybe not in the worst trauma. Well, we're really lucky because this week we kind of have a two-for-one punch with our Torah portions. We're going to have Tazria and Mitzora together. And I'm super lucky because I have not only a past work colleague, but also a forever friend with us tonight who's going to help us walk through what that might look like in modern day life. And so we're really stoked about tonight's guest. Samantha Klipstein has a degree in communications and media studies from SUNY Oneonta. She grew up as a day school kid, growing up at Solomon Schechter before moving to public school for high school. Post-college, she went to work in two different synagogues, one of which was with me! Yay, staff lunches, and then we became friends forever, and that's why she's here. After many years of thinking about it, in 2021, Sam finally made the decision to pursue a career in nursing. Now she spends her time working as a nursing technician for an inpatient hospital unit and spends her time working, running around in, and providing care in a busy emergency room. In her free time, Sam likes to cook, work out, fantasize about being a Texas Roadhouse influencer, and spend time with her Aussie Greyhound, Alice. Samantha, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome to Drinking and Droshing, Tour with a Twist.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here with you guys.
We are so excited to have you here. And Gabe, I know that it's always silly for you when I have a especially good friend come on the podcast, but you are also an especially good friend. And so I'm very excited to have the two of you kind of really get to meet and actually interact in conversation today. So Gabe, how's it going?
Aw, thanks. It's great to be here. Super excited.
Amazing. Well, we don't have Idan here today. We know he's listening in and we hope he's enjoying his vacation, his very well-deserved vacation. And I know for me, as somebody who used to work in a hospital as a hospital chaplain, Gabe is going to be working in a hospital this summer as a hospital chaplain. There's a lot to learn about how best to provide care and using some of our major Jewish values in order to do so. I'm excited to hear about this week's double portion and also how to apply it because, I mean, hey, do we even have leprosy anymore? Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
I have been thinking about, you know, some sicknesses recently.
Okay, what have you been thinking about?
So this sounds weird, but ordination is coming up very soon. Would you agree? Like, you know, it's less than a month away.
Less than a month. We're all very excited.
And last year, I was supposed to go to ordination because a bunch of our friends were getting ordained. And something happened that stopped me from going to ordination.
Yes, I took you to the hospital at like 4 a.m. It was great.
And why did you do that?
Because you are allergic to shrimp and other shellfish. And we don't know what you ate, but inherently, evidently, there was shellfish in it.
So we don't know if that's true. And Gabe is just spreading lies. But what I will say did happen is my face swelled up, I got hives, I got a rash all over, We weren't really sure what was going on, but like, we just desperately wanted to find medical care. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, that was kind of important at that moment.
And in the middle of the night, we were able to use Google to kind of try to figure out what was going on. But way back when, they weren't necessarily able to use Google for their rashes or body issues or skin problems.
No, they had to talk to like actual people and stuff.
Yeah. And so I guess, is it possible that the best, you know, thing that they had in order to deal with these things was the Torah as like a way to deal with medical problems?
Well, that's kind of what these two Torah portions are about. That's right, there are two Torah portions. So let's get started with the first. So God speaks to Moses to talk about ritual impurity. What makes somebody impure? Giving birth. It's complicated math, but let's just say that gender inequality abounds here, and having a girl is double the amount of impurity time for a mother than having a boy. Whoops. How about you become pure again? Well, gift the priests a lamb as a burnt offering and a pigeon or a turtle dove as a guilt offering. Budget tight, don't worry, we've got you. Two pigeons. Congrats, you're pure again. What else causes impurity? Skin diseases. Swelling, rashes, discoloration, scaly infections all need to be reported to the priests. Aaron is basically Dr. Fauci. This is the third year I've made that joke and it's still funny. Priests perform triage, and different stages lead to different levels of quarantine. Cool. Hey, by the way, balding doesn't make you impure. My hairline is grateful for the clarification. Back to leprosy. People with the disease tear their clothes, lose their head coverings, and mask up for real. It says al-safam yateh, which literally means they shall cover their upper lip or mustache. The leper is required to tell everyone around them that they are impure and should be avoided. They are to live outside of the camp until the infection clears. I don't know about you, but all of this feels very familiar to me. Thank God for medical precedent. Also, hazardous waste procedures come from this portion. Cloth that has been touched by a leaking infection needs to be isolated for 7 days and then either burned or washed, depending on if the infection spreads on the cloth. Gross. And that's Parashat Tazria. But wait, there's more, because again, this is a double portion. Hey look, it's Parashat Metsora, more leprosy and what we can do about it. When a leper is healthy, the priest goes out to do one final check and sacrifice, not of the leper. Instead, the priest gets two pure birds, some cedar wood, scarlet hyssop, and then does a complicated sacrificial ritual before letting only one of the birds go free. Cool. Once the patient is deemed clean again, they can wash their clothes, hair, and body, and then re-enter the camp, but not their own tent, for at least 1 week. After that week, though, they're good to go, but on the 8th day, they've also got to sacrifice some more. Two pure male lambs and one female, and some flour and oil. Here's where the priest comes back in. The priest takes that offering and sacrifices the burnt offering. For the guilt offering, the lamb's blood is placed on the right ear, right thumb, and right big toe of the one being purified. The priest does the same with the oil, pouring the rest on the person's head. This is really sounding like the ordination ritual. I wonder if there's a connection there. Again, for those with tight purse strings, we can adjust and use either one lamb or two pigeons or turtle doves according to their need. After all, medical costs are expensive. God tells Moses and Aaron that if a plague erupts in the house in the land of Canaan, then the priest examines the house. If the house is declared infected, then it is left empty for 7 days. If the plague spreads, the house is gutted and rebuilt with new materials. If the plague returns, the house is torn down and the materials are to be cast outside of the city. Wait, hold on. Where were we? Oh, right. What makes a person impure? You guessed it, genital discharge. The person's bedding along with anything they sit on is impure. The bedding and clothes get washed and the person bathes in water. Those who touch the person do the same, as well as someone who gets spit on by a person with discharge. I don't know why we're spitting on people, but let's just move on. Once the person has been purified, they quarantine for 7 days, wash their clothes, and bathe again, and then they're good to go. Just kidding, they make an offering. It's all about sacrifices, right? Menstruation also causes impurity, requiring a 7-day quarantine. Touching menstruating people also renders one impure, along with anything they sit or lie on, or anyone who touches their clothes, bedding, or an object where they sat. When a person has discharge lasting many days outside of a normal menstrual cycle, they are impure as long as the discharge lasts. Once they are no longer bleeding, they wait another 7 days and then are pure again. On the 8th day, you guessed it, a sacrifice. The Israelites are commanded to guard themselves against impurity, as bodily impurity defiles the sacred space of the tabernacle. And that's Parashat Metsorah.
Well, thanks, Gabe. And in case anyone out there is curious, yes, leprosy does still exist. I checked. It's pretty uncommon. It's now known as Hansen's disease, but yes, it is still out there.
Good to know. Kind of terrifying to know. But good. Awesome. Let's get into our conversation.
Sam, while we've had medical students on the show before, and we've had health professionals on the show, people that deal with either the health communities or outside the health communities or health policy, we've actually never really had somebody on the ground in a hospital working with patients, you know, to be on the show. And so I'm thrilled you're here, because one of the reasons that I really appreciate Metsorah is this idea that the priests are among the people. You know, there's really not a barrier. And it feels that way in the ER as well, that everybody's kind of just on the floor, in the fields, helping out where they can, and giving a human face to somebody who's in need. And so I want to know, and I'd love for you to share both, like, what got you excited about going into nursing, you know, and what inspires you to keep doing the work, to be on the floor and with the people who are hurting in this moment?
I think that concept that you mentioned, you know, togetherness and no barriers is really important, because that's really what the emergency room is like in comparison to going to, you know, an outpatient doctor or even being an inpatient unit. You know, you're very separated. You see a nurse and maybe a CNA or a nurse tech like myself, but in the emergency room, everybody is right there. You see the patients, you see the nurse techs, you see the nurses, you see the providers. We're all right there, and we formed a team, and we're working together to help our patients, to help people get better. So nursing was something I always thought about doing, and I put it off. I told myself that I was going to work in communications. That was what I went to college for. But when I finally decided to make the jump into nursing, one of the biggest factors in making my decision to finally take the plunge and going to nursing was seeing how COVID changed the world, and especially how it changed the entire healthcare field. And seeing how hard nurses worked in my community and across the world really was what pushed me into making my decision. And I think it's really important to know that nursing is, you know, in my opinion, nursing really embodies a lot of the Jewish values we're taught as students learning Jewish values. Everything from gemilut chasadim, acting with kindness. No matter what, I'm treating my patients with kindness and compassion and caring for them. And something really important is that shmirut haguf, protecting one's body, is so important in Judaism. And when people come to you, our patients, they can't do that for themselves in that moment. They're not able to care for themselves. They're not able to protect themselves. And that's where nurses and providers and other healthcare professionals can come in and help people do that for themselves when they're not able to. And in turn, we're visiting the sick and we're supporting the sick. Bikur Cholim, another thing I was learning growing up. And really at its core, we're treating people the way we want to be treated. We're respecting others. And through all that, we're honoring humanity. And again, these are all things I learned growing up. Kavod, ve'achavta l'reach kamocha, kavod habriot. These are these Jewish values that I think you can see really in nurses.
You know, it occurs to me that there's a bit of a disconnect in this Torah portion where we're told that a sick person or an impure person needs to separate themselves from the community. And yet we know that, especially in the modern era, that those people are often the ones in most need of support, in most need of others. And so today we have hospitals, we have emergency rooms, and that's kind of the work that you've dedicated yourself to. So I'm curious, how do you square that circle? How do you put those two things together, this need to separate oneself and also this need for care?
it's interesting because when we have patients that do in fact need to isolate, we call them isolation patients for whatever it is that they have that is contagious to other people. But in actuality, we're not isolating any patient when they come into the hospital. We're in theory creating this little community. Every patient that's in the hospital has so many people looking after them. They have a nurse, they have a doctor, they have a nurse tech, they have people coming in to support them in terms of bringing them food, to bringing them daily care, to ambulating them, physical therapists, phlebotomists, specialists. There are so many people coming to help each patient in the hospital that we really are creating a small community of support for them, not isolating them to cure them, but in fact, creating this community. And that's what brings them towards healing.
I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that it can be difficult to have a chronic illness. It can be difficult to have an acute illness. You know, pain is pain, and sometimes you see it and sometimes you don't. For me, I've had lasting pain from car accidents that happened when I was in senior year, or I've had issues with my coughing from, you know, double pneumonia. There are others who have chronic illnesses every day who go through things and you don't see it, right? Like, you have these invisible illnesses. And here, Sam, in our tour portion, it is heartbreaking in some ways because it may not be seen. The thing might not be seen, and you have to announce it. You have to vulnerably put yourself out there and say, like, Tame, like, I'm not clean. I'm unclean. And that seems terrifying to me. Like, why would I want to do that? Why would I want to put myself as a social pariah, even at the risk of, you know, possibly hurting other people? That can be scary, right? Like, to lose your community because you're hoping to keep your community safe. And I'm curious how that comes together, you know, in terms of both being a nurse, but also what you see in the hospital of, you know, people almost sometimes still associating shame with some of the diseases that they're dealing with or some of the things they come to the emergency room with.
It can be very shameful for certain patients to come into the emergency room. They're embarrassed by their condition. They're scared. There's so much fear that comes along with coming into the hospital. And that's something that can be challenging for any type of healthcare provider, because for us, being in the hospital is a daily occurrence. But for patients coming in, it's scary. It's totally out of the norm for them. And like you said, they're in a vulnerable position. So when they come in, we do our best to really embody those Jewish values, like acting with kindness and kavod, because these people are coming in, and like we said, they may have shame, they might be embarrassed by their condition, and that's our job as healthcare providers, is to provide them care and comfort and help towards healing them, but also act in a way with kindness that brings them that comfort so they don't feel that shame or embarrassment around whatever it is that's bringing them in.
Sam, one of the things that I'm noticing, or one of the things that Gabe and I were just talking about, was the fact that normal bodily functions are sometimes looked at as impure. You know, there are people who menstruate, there are people who have nocturnal emissions, there are people who have, you know, voluntary emissions, depending on how you're living your life. And there's an interesting thing of, again, uncleanliness, this isolation, this untouchable area. And so, you know, I keep coming back to this word shame or embarrassment, and maybe the word I'm looking for is stigma. And I'm curious, how might we be able to, and I know you've talked about this a little bit with kavod, but how might we be able to destigmatize some of these things that are just parts of our lives?
I think the only way to destigmatize things that are maybe uncomfortable or shameful for people to talk about is to talk about them. Things like menstruation and postpartum are not talked about enough. And that's why there's this sense of shame around them. But the more they're brought out into the open, and the more we're having open, candid conversations with especially young people about things like menstruation, about things that are normal to happen with their bodies, there's not going to be a change in the way people feel about it in that sense of stigma, because there's no communication around it.
One thing that I notice here in this portion is that there's always a solution, you know, for helping to take care of our people, that there's a sacrifice. And I don't look like I think that the sacrifice isn't necessarily the medication that people would need to take care of their issues. But let's face it, right now in our country, you know, if you're listening to this in America, people aren't always getting the care they need. They aren't always able to access the medication they need. People are struggling. I know. For me, I haven't been able to get a doctor's appointment for a back injury for weeks, much to Gabe's dismay. And it is a really interesting piece to say, well, what happens when we don't have the answers right in front of us? What happens when our caregivers, you know, have a recommendation or have a remedy, but the remedy is not available?
It's incredibly challenging. And speaking both as someone who works as a healthcare provider, but also has been the patient who cannot access the cure that they need or the family member of the patient who needs medication, it's incredibly challenging. And we do see that. Unfortunately, we live in a world today where not everybody is able to access the treatment that they need to help themselves, whether that's CVS doesn't have a prescription readily available because there's so many back orders right now, or people are not able to afford things like healthcare, doctor's appointments, their medication, and they find themselves in situations where they come to us in the emergency room. They're, for whatever reason, not able to access things like insulin for their diabetes or medication for their high blood pressure, and they're coming in very sick. And this is all because they were not able to access what they need to care for themselves, to no fault of their own.
And that really does directly connect with this Torah portion, wherein we have multiple instances where if a sacrifice is too financially burdensome, if a person can't afford to sacrifice two lambs and instead needs to sacrifice one lamb or two pigeons or another alternative sacrifice, then they have that ability. That we want to make sure that the sacrifice, the thing that makes people pure again, is available and accessible to everyone, regardless of their ability.
I think this Torah portion is more important now than ever, because right now we live in a world where people cannot afford medical care and medication and things that they need to keep themselves healthy. So it's interesting that all these years ago, the Torah even had solutions for people that could not afford cures in biblical times. But now we live in a world where people can't afford these things for themselves, which is interesting because when you come in the emergency room, we will ask for your insurance information and we take all that down. But at the end of the day, that doesn't impact the care we give you. Whether you come in with Blue Cross Blue Shield or nothing in your wallet, we're going to give you the same level of care. It's also why we're seeing higher volumes in emergency rooms. People who were once able to go visit a private physician or go to an urgent care no longer can because they don't have the financial means to do so. So they find themselves in desperate need of healthcare where they won't be turned away because of their lack of insurance. So they're coming to the emergency room as a last resort.
Look, I think that that's very real and also incredibly heartbreaking. And something that we've seen even some of our current friends do, you know, people don't know what to do and don't, it can take months to be able to see a provider. And what's amazing to me, by the way, and I'm sure kind of amazing to you as somebody who works in an emergency room and is very aware of how backed up they can be, is that in these portions, the priests seem to just be available. They seem to be able to see the patients, you know, on a schedule. You know, and that's the question sometimes, Gabe, I was laughing before a little bit when you were doing your rundown of that they're allowed to go back into the camp, but they can't go back into their tent. And that's because, you know, the priest needs to book their appointment for another day. Like, you know, he needs to do a follow-up appointment to be able to see them. All of which is to say, like, the messaging of these two parshas are really interesting because Tazria really deals with impurity and uncleanness. And I would say that Mitzora really deals with trying to see what we can do about it and how we might be able to take care of those people who need the care. And so, Samantha, I feel like in the emergency room, you deal with this all the time, right? You have people who come in that desperately really need the care, and you have people that come in that are maybe don't need the care as much, but need the attention or are there for some other reason that is just slightly less dire. And how do you triage that? How do you prioritize between the two?
I mentioned before the concept of Shmirat HaGuf, protecting oneself. And for many patients, they come in not able to do that. So it becomes our responsibility as healthcare workers to protect them, to help them in a way they cannot for themselves. And I think this is where triage ties in, because our nurses are so knowledgeable and skilled and experienced that they are able to essentially protect one's body by determining how urgently they need care. Is this someone coming in with something that needs to be treated immediately? A rule out stroke, someone coming in cardiac arrest or respiratory distress. those are the people that need this protection more than anyone else when they can't do that for themselves.
I feel like we could keep talking about, you know, the similarities and differences between Levitical triage and, you know, healthcare and contemporary healthcare for, you know, a while. There are definitely some differences, but I really love the parallels we're drawing. That said, we are running short on time, so I do want to ask before we move on, if there were one message, one call to action, one bit of wisdom that you wanted to leave people with, what do you want listeners to walk away with after hearing this episode?
We are working as hard as we can, and it may not seem like it at times, but we are doing everything in our power to get you well, to get you home. We're working with the doctors. We're working with the other healthcare professionals to do our best. We want you to be healthy just as much as you want to be healthy, even if it doesn't seem like that. And we really are doing our best. We're bending over backwards. We're going without breaks. We're going without water. We're going without running to the bathroom when we need to so that we can care for our patients. And we really do care.
You know, Gabe, with this double Parsha, you know, I'm feeling a little bit like I need a double. But what I will say is some parts of these lessons that we're learning, of these Torah teachings, they come off a little sour. And so I was wondering, is there any sort of drink that really can encompass everything we're talking about, that, you know, this idea of both impurity, vulnerability, sickness, health, you know, I don't know, just making sure that maybe we might have a sense of cleanliness at the end of all of it?
Oh, is there? This week on Midrashic Mixology for Parashat Tazri Mitzora, we have the lemony leper. For its disinfectant properties, start out with a lemon wedge. For purity, a few mint leaves. Muddle those together with a half ounce of simple syrup to get those flavors going. It's a double portion, so we're going with two spirits, 1 ounce each, gin and limoncello. For a non-alcoholic leper, go with 1 ounce each, lemonade and limeade. Either way, add some ice and shake until well chilled. Strain over fresh ice. This is looking a bit too pretty for a leprous infection. Skewer some raspberries onto a toothpick for those boils and blisters as a garnish. To your health, L'chaim.
L'chaim. I definitely could use that drink after a shift in the ER.
Nice.
That sounds absolutely delicious. Pour me two.
On it.
Also like a lemony drink, and I don't always love gin, and I'm curious if the limoncello is going to actually, you know, cleanse out that gin flavor for me. So Gabe, I'm excited for you to make it. It'll be wonderful. It might take the sting off of the fact that we are at our thank yous and closing cues section, and we're coming to the end of our episode. And so Sam, Gabe, Tazria Mitzora deals with caring for the community through sickness and health. What are the best ways for us to care for ourselves and our communities at the same time? Sam, we'll start with you.
Self-care is so important, and I know we're all talking about it, but it is so vital. If I've learned anything in the last year and a half working in healthcare, I cannot care for my patients unless I care for myself. If I'm not getting enough sleep, if I'm not eating right, if I'm not doing the things that make me happy and bring me joy, I am not myself, and I cannot give my patients the best care that they deserve. So I try to do my best. I do all the at-home facials and DIY relaxation things because I know when I feel my best, I can give my all to my patients. And that's really fulfilling.
I agree with you. I love getting a manicure. It always makes me feel better. Gabe.
Amanda.
I know that this is your favorite topic to avoid, but let's answer it anyway. What do you do to make sure that you're taking care of yourself when you're taking care of others? Because you're so good at taking care of others in a crisis.
The first thing is to make sure that I'm caffeinated, because that's important. The second thing, though, is to breathe. And that's not something that I'm always good at, is breathing. Which seems stupid because you say, Gabe, clearly you're fine at breathing because you've been alive for the last however many years. And that's true. And yet also, sometimes you need to do it a little more mindfully. Sometimes you need to say to yourself, I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to take a few deep breaths before I answer that question or before I walk into this next meeting or, before I do this next thing. Nobody is going to be mad at you for taking a breath before going on to your next thing.
Sorry, that was just me taking a breath before answering that next question. Gabe and I joke a lot because Diet Coke is my stress drink. I drink it to de-stress and also probably it just amped me up more. Yeah, for our listeners who can't see us, Gabe just held up two Diet Cokes that he had on his desk right in front of him, and I came home yesterday to a tower of Diet Cokes on our living room table that Gabe had decided to make. But the other thing that I would say, aside from always, you should always have a form of ice cream in your house, because whether you're hurt, upset, or, sick, like, you should just always have ice cream in the house. I will say that for me, getting outside helps. For me, making sure that I do have some time outside in the fresh air, getting some alone time, especially because I can be a little introverted, has been really helpful because it also lets me have time to think. And I'm going to put it out there that for me, I find it most helpful to do this in the morning, shortly after I wake up, to get out as quickly as possible. And so, for our listeners that might not know this, Gabe and I are roommates and I have a dog named Takiya, and I am responsible for Takiya's walks. And I always do Takiya's morning walks, and sometimes Gabe will do Takiya's evening walks for the concept of stupid walks for, your stupid mental health. But the idea is, like, really that making sure that you make that time for yourself, that you make sure to fill your cup, because you can't help others if your cup is empty, is an important piece. And sometimes also, by the way, just getting into conversations with people you love can help fill you up, people that aren't in the same work with you. And so, Sam, for people who might want to continue this conversation with you, how might they find or follow you? For instance, do you have a special social media presence that you want to share with our listeners?
If perhaps you would like to follow me, or perhaps you like Texas Roadhouse or meal prepping, you can find me on TikTok at Fat Charlie D'Amelio, there's no E in Charlie, or on Instagram at Samantha Clip.
And Sam, any last words, thoughts, concerns, or jokes?
Well, you said it, filling your cup. Please stay hydrated. I cannot tell you how many people we see that do not drink enough water. Please drink your water. It's such great self-care.
It's true. As they say, hydrate or dehydrate. And I will say thank you so much to Sam and her emotional support water bottle that she holds up on a regular basis. Thank you, Gabe, for making me laugh so hard tonight during your partial rundown, and also really for making the perfect drink for Sam. She's very excited about it. Thank you so much to Ijan, who helped with tech, even though he's not here right now, made sure that tech actually happened. Thank you to our editors, because we gave you a wonderful episode to edit, and we are sorry and grateful. Just like Sondheim says, you're always sorry, you're always grateful. And thank you to our listeners. You're brilliant. We love you. And our conclusion's coming at you soon. Stay tuned. Gabe, as somebody who's dealt with sickness off and on throughout my life, and generally parts of pain throughout my life, and also somebody who has worked in emergency rooms, especially in pediatric emergency rooms, I will say these health workers, these care providers, they try so hard to make sure that people are well treated and well taken care of. And I want to say I so appreciated what Sam was talking about, because for me, she and her other ER nurses and healthcare workers, they are the priests, being there with the people, holding their hands, trying to help them in time, trying to figure out if they're clean, not clean. They wouldn't use those words, but making sure basically that they're good, they're healthy. And really, like, in the ER, they just want people to get out of that liminal space. They want people to either be able to go back to their own camp, go back to their own tent, or to be taken care of in a new area where they're really going to get some specialized individual care.
The idea of the, thank our healthcare heroes. It was kind of a thing that came about during the pandemic when, you know, people would bang on pots and pans at shift changes. And it's something that's kind of faded out of the zeitgeist. But it's something that, like, for me, really stuck with me, as these are people who care for anyone who needs help. And there's just something so incredibly beautiful about that, something really sacred about that work. And I think Sam was able to put it into, you know, some pretty concrete Jewish terms, talking about kavod and honor, talking about bikur cholim, visiting the sick, talking about these kind of classical Jewish values that we hear about, you know, in elementary school. And as we grow up, you know, they kind of become amorphous things. And yet, both in this Torah portion and in the work that Sam described, those kind of amorphous ideas became really concrete actions.
I think so, too. I really believe that making sure that we're taking care of the vulnerable, and I keep thinking back to the statement that Cantor Julie Eugen Green said in last week's episode with the portion Shmini, that Tameh or Tuma might not be impure or unclean, it might be vulnerable. And then it's on us as a community to take care of our vulnerable, of the people who are asking for help or might not be able to ask for help in the moment. And we have to say, we spend some time asking for help, you know, every so often. And if you are interested in giving some help to us as we hopefully show care to you and the rest of our community, feel free to head over to drinkinganddroshing.com, hit that support us button. We'd love to both hear from you, but also if you're willing, feel free to help support the work that we're doing. We hope that all of you are feeling well and staying healthy. As Sam said, don't forget to hydrate. It's a good thing to maybe flush out the system once in a while. And of course, we raise our glass to you this week. We're thinking about you in sickness and in health, hopefully in health mostly. So we say to you, L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Hi, I'm Samantha, and you're listening to Drinking and Joshing, Torah with a Twist, and I'm about to go get all the ingredients to pour myself a lemony leper after a long shift in the ER.